This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 48 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. So who's ready for the season to end? I'm sure David Johnson owners are. I feel your pain, though, guys. I've got some David Johnson this year, too, and it sucks. When you lose a dude to injury, you get that same feeling that you get when you think someone's waving at you, but they're really waving at the person behind you. Like, you get this feeling of, oh yeah, this is great, someone's recognizing me. Oh, just kidding, everything sucks. Don't lose hope though, guys. It's a long season and tons of things are going to go down in football. And there are some replacements, albeit not David Johnson level replacements, out there on the waiver wire for you. We'll talk through them on this very 15 transactions episode. Before getting into the transactions though, I wanted to send a quick note that with the NFL season here, we're entering week two, remember that you can catch all the games on TuneIn and the TuneIn app. At home or on the go, listen to the home call of every game live or pop in and out of the action every Sunday with NFL First and Goal. That's TuneIn's audio red zone station. Download the TuneIn app today and listen to the NFL for free for 30 days. TuneIn is your everything audio app. Now let's dig in. Hold Kareem Hunt. If you guys have been listening to this podcast over the last 3 or 4 months, you know that I love me some Kareem Hunt. And you know that I was dancing pantsless when he did what he did on Thursday night. When you get these big performances, you get people out there saying, sell that player, sell that player. He'll never do that again this year. And you know what? Those people are not wrong. He probably won't do that this year. Hunt's 45.6 PPR total this week was the fifth highest output that we've seen over the last 6 seasons by a running back in a fantasy relevant week. And he did this while playing 58% of Kansas City snaps, which is certainly not elite level snaps. But here's the thing, guys. Your league mates know this. They're probably not looking at snap counts, I get it. But they're more than likely aware that this was somewhat of an outlier performance for Kareem Hunt. So selling him high is not that easy. And let's not take this to the extreme. Just because the performance that Hunt had was somewhat of an outlier, it would be an outlier for any player who did this, that doesn't mean that Hunt isn't a capable top 10 running back from here on out. In fact, I think we should expect him to be a top 10 running back. That's where he was ranked among NumberFire experts, myself, Jim Saunas, and Brandon Gadula, entering the season. And even if you think this performance is a little bit fluky, there are positives that came out of it. He was clearly the starter in this game. I know his snap count wasn't as high as you would like to see from an elite running back, but he was the starter. And he ran the ball well. According to our net expected points metric at NumberFire, he had a near 60% success rate, which means 60%, or roughly 60%, of his runs positively impacted the Chiefs' expected points total. The average for a running back is typically around 40%. And every single one of Kareem Hunt's attempts went for positive yardage. Kareem Hunt is good. I'm always open to hearing trade offers to see where people are on a certain player. But I highly doubt there are people out there who are openly willing to get rid of their early first round pick for someone like Kareem Hunt right now. So you have to hold him. What else is there to do? You have to hold Kareem Hunt unless you can get a locked in top notch player for him. Buy Chris Hogan. You know, some people were expecting a breakout game for Chris Hogan in week one, but I think that there's enough evidence to feel some optimism moving forward. Danny Amendola saw 7 targets in that offense in week one to Hogan's 5, but he's week to week with a concussion. We know Danny Amendola never stays healthy. And a big thing too is that Chris Hogan saw 4 of Tom Brady's 15 attempts that traveled 15 or more yards through the air last Thursday. Those are the most deep ball targets that any wide receiver saw in football, or tied for the most. And naturally, you want those kind of looks for your wide receivers. Those are the targets that we are targeting. But I think what's most intriguing about Chris Hogan, we talked about wanting the player who's going to play the slot in New England. Chris Hogan ran over 64% of his routes on Thursday from the slot. That's according to Pro Football Focus. That's the area of the field that New England loves to target. We've seen it with Wes Welker, and we've seen it with Julian Edelman. And Julian Edelman is out for the year. Tom Brady completed only 16 passes last Thursday when his average was over 24 completions per game last season. And he struggled against the Chiefs. Remember, in 2014, he was terrible against them. He only completed 14 passes in that game. So it was a rough matchup for New England. They underperformed overall, but Hogan played in the slot and he managed to see about 27% of Tom Brady's deep ball targets. This all tells me that things can turn around quickly, especially with a matchup against New Orleans next week. Sell Jordan Howard and add Tariq Cohen. Look, guys, I talked about Jordan Howard on last week's 15 Transactions show, and what happened this week was part of my fear. I say part of it because one half of it had to do with touchdown upside, and of course Jordan Howard scored a touchdown. But the other half was Tariq Cohen digging into his receiving workload. Howard ended the game with 38 snaps to Tariq Cohen's 28, and he ended up playing about 57% of the team's snaps. Howard had a 65% snap rate last year, but from week four onward, which is when he became the starter, the unquestioned starter, Howard averaged a near 74% snap rate. That's a very big difference from the 57% that he saw on Sunday. So yes, I would be nervous as a Jordan Howard owner because of the touchdown upside that I talked about last week. It's not like this offense is very good, but also, quite obviously, because of Tariq Cohen. Now, I wasn't that high on Tariq Cohen entering the season because I thought that he was going to take away more from Jordan Howard than be a standalone value himself. After week one, I'm probably wrong. I think Tariq Cohen does have some flex appeal, especially in PPR leagues. His usage was insane. He caught 8 of 12 targets for 47 yards and a score to go along with 5 rushing attempts. That alone is why you want to add Tariq Cohen. But with that being said, I would actually be open to hearing trade offers if someone in your league is super, super high on Cohen. If they love that breakout performance and they want some Tariq Cohen, listen to offers. Per PFF, he ran 21 routes on Sunday, which means he was targeted 12 times on 21 routes. That is not sustainable, guys. That's not sustainable production at all. But I do think that he'll be useful. They don't have any receivers anymore in Chicago. They just lost Kevin White, if you call him a receiver, that is. With Jordan Howard in that backfield, though, it's tough for Tariq Cohen to be more than a Darren Sproles type back for Chicago. But again, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that he can be a flex option. And the Bears should see a lot of negative game scripts this season, which means Tariq Cohen could be on the field a good bit. I don't think he's a bad PPR back. But if I were to get him off the waiver wire, I would at least send feelers out to my league to see how they're feeling about Cohen because you might be able to get a more usable asset for him. And for those asking, and I'll add this to this 15 transaction show to differentiate it more from the article, I would probably spend around 35 to 40% of my free agent auction budget on someone like Tariq Cohen. And I think that he's probably one of the two top waiver wire ads this week. Drop or hold Carson Palmer. What a disappointment Carson Palmer was this week. He threw 3 interceptions against last season's second worst schedule-adjusted secondary, according to NumberFire's metrics. Guys, the personnel on that Detroit defense is not good. The fact that Carson Palmer did what he did against this defense is not a good sign. So if you're in a shallow league, I think it's totally fine to drop Carson Palmer. There's a chance that Carson Palmer is no longer good at football. But I will say this, if you're streaming the quarterback position, I actually think that he's still a good option this week. He threw 6 deep balls on Sunday and only 7 quarterbacks had more, and the Cardinals are facing the Colts in week 2. We saw what a Vontae Davis-less Indianapolis secondary looked against Jared Goff in week 1. Jared Goff looked like a god. And really, if you think about it, the matchup lines up pretty well with what the Cardinals want to do, which is just drive the ball down the field in that Bruce Arians offense. Palmer was only able to connect on 1 of those 6 deep balls that he threw this past week, but Jared Goff against the Colts hit 5 of his 6 passes that traveled 15 or more air yards. He had 136 yards and a touchdown on those types of throws in week 1. So if Vontae Davis is out again for Indianapolis, I don't think Carson Palmer is a bad streaming option. Add Buck Allen. Look, I talked about Buck Allen also last week, and the main reason I talked about him was because of the ambiguity in that Ravens backfield. He's arguably a better running back than Terrence West. But in week 1, we were kind of introduced to another path to Buck Allen upside, and that was a Danny Woodhead injury, which was almost inevitable, it seemed like. Now, the amount of time that Danny Woodhead might be sidelined is still unknown, but it sounds like it's going to be a significant amount of time. And Danny Woodhead was balling out before he went down. He caught 3 passes on the first drive for the Ravens. He actually ended the game with the most receptions for Baltimore. Buck Allen came in relief and saw a lot of work. He actually played more snaps than Terrence West did. I don't see that as him being the starter per se. I see that more as a, we're destroying the Bengals right now, so we're going to throw in our backup running back to keep legs fresh. But I think there are 2 reasons that you should be interested in Buck Allen, especially in PPR formats. The first one, like I said, he might be better than Terrence West, period. But the second one is that we know that Baltimore likes to check down to their running backs. Over the last two seasons, only New Orleans has thrown the ball to their running backs more than Baltimore has. Buck Allen, between him and Terrence West, is the receiving back. So anytime Baltimore's in more of a negative game script, which they certainly were not against Cincinnati, Buck Allen could actually catch a ton of passes. And he's now going to see early down work as well and split time with Terrence West. So I think you can make the case that Buck Allen is just as good of an add as Tariq Cohen this week. Add Kerwin Williams, Chris Johnson, and Andre Ellington. Look, I have some thoughts as to how I would prioritize the waiver wire with these Arizona Cardinals running backs, but I think you probably know just as much as I do about this situation. I'll say this, Andre Ellington played more snaps than Kerwin Williams in week one, but the main reason for that is because the Cardinals were in an ultra-negative game script. Between Kerwin Williams and Andre Ellington, Kerwin Williams would be the early down back, while Andre Ellington would be the pass-catching back. Remember, earlier this offseason, Andre Ellington was thinking about playing wide receiver for Arizona. But then Bruce Arians comes out and says, we might sign Chris Johnson. And remember, back in 2015, Chris Johnson was the one player in David Johnson's way during David Johnson's rookie season. Chris Johnson ended up with a 43% rushing market share in that offense with nearly 200 rushing attempts. So how would I prioritize these guys? I'd probably go Kerwin Williams first, then Chris Johnson, then Andre Ellington. But there's no way that I would be prioritizing these players off the waiver wire ahead of Tariq Cohen and Buck Allen. Sell Sammy Watkins and add Cooper Kupp. Again, this is another transaction from last week, so I'm sorry that I have to reiterate it, but I think that it's important. Sammy Watkins looked fine in his debut with the Rams. He caught all five of his targets. He had 58 yards. But I'm not that impressed by the output. Like I said earlier, the Colts were without corner Vontae Davis. This was the perfect matchup for Sammy Watkins. And Watkins ended up being out-targeted by rookie Cooper Kupp. And the bigger point here is that Sammy Watkins didn't see a single target down the field despite Jared Goff throwing six deep balls. Cooper Kupp was the guy who was on the receiving end of three of those, and he ended up with the lone receiving touchdown on the day. So my worry with Sammy Watkins isn't even only the fact that he was out-targeted by Cooper Kupp in week one. It's also, what if he's not the main field stretcher on this team? That's what Sammy Watkins is good at doing. And the other thing to point out here is that the Rams had unbelievable field position in week one. Their average drive started on their own 38-yard line, which was the best field position in the league in week one. Against more difficult competition, they're just not going to score as many points. That's obvious. And with Sammy Watkins performing as he did despite all of this is kind of concerning. And then on top of that, if you look at what their upcoming schedule looks like, they get Washington next week, so he's going to face Josh Norman. Later in the season, they get Seattle, Jacksonville, Arizona, the Giants, the Texans, the Vikings. Those are scary secondaries, and they're definitely scary secondaries for a number one wide receiver. If you can get rid of Sammy Watkins now, I would 1,000,000% try to do it. Add Babytron. Oh, sorry. Add Kenny Golladay. He's happening, guys. Babytron is happening. Naturally, anytime someone comes out their first NFL game and they have a 4-reception, 69-yard, nice, 2-touchdown performance, you're going to want to add him. But even as Kenny Golladay's biggest fan, I'm still skeptical of his true week-to-week consistency. He still played 24 fewer snaps than Marvin Jones did in week one and 19 fewer than Golden Tate. He's the clear number three wideout on that team. And Eric Ebron didn't contribute in week one. So if Eric Ebron does contribute, or when he contributes, that'll dig into Golladay as well. There's only so much work to go around. So yes, you have to add Kenny Golladay. But I just want people to lower their expectations and be reasonable with what he can do week in and week out during this rookie campaign. But my goodness, am I excited. Babytron is a thing, and I love it so much. Sell Paul Perkins. Guys, the Giants' offense was pathetic against Dallas. I don't know if Eli Manning is playing in some fantasy football completion percentage league and he had himself, or what. I don't know what happened to this Giants' offense in week one. They are not good, and that's not good for Paul Perkins owners. Against the Cowboys in week one, Perkins ran the ball 7 times, which actually ended up being over 58% of the team's rushes, which is not that bad of a market share, for just 16 yards. According to our success rate metric, which I talked about earlier, not a single one of his carries positively impacted the Giants' chances of scoring. He had a success rate of 0. You and I had the same success rate as Paul Perkins. But I think what's even more frightening with Perkins is that Shane Vereen played 13 more snaps than he did in week one. Once that game saw a negative game script, goodbye Paul Perkins. Shane Vereen becomes the thing. And this is against a Dallas Cowboys defense that is not that great on paper. And look, it's not like the Giants have a very attractive rushing attack to begin with. Last season, they were bottom five as a team in fantasy points scored at the running back position. So even with a healthy Odell Beckham, I don't know how you can feel confident throwing Paul Perkins into your lineup moving forward. Drop Jamal Williams. If there was any doubt that Ty Montgomery wasn't the lead back for Green Bay, I think that week one settled it. He ended the game with 90% of the team's snaps while Jamal Williams was on the field for just 7% of them. I don't know why we would expect any sort of committee in this backfield. I know some people thought it might happen in August, but it's not happening. So essentially, Jamal Williams is now a handcuff, and you guys know how I feel about handcuffs. You don't need to be rostering Jamal Williams right now. Add Paul Richardson. The Seahawks offense was really, really disappointing in week one, but we did get an idea of who their number two wide receiver is. And it looks like it's Paul Richardson. He played just two fewer snaps than Doug Baldwin did on Sunday, and he had 15 more than Tyler Lockett had. Now, there are some questions surrounding Tyler Lockett and if he's even 100% because of a leg injury, but I still think that all of this is a very good sign for Paul Richardson. And the other thing that I really liked is that he was on the receiving end of three deep balls from Russell Wilson, who attempted seven against Green Bay. And like I said with Chris Hogan, those are the kind of targets that you want out of your wide receiver. That's how you score fantasy points. For players with little volume or less volume than typical usable starters, you don't want Jarvis Landry type average depth of targets. You want guys getting down the field, and that's exactly what Paul Richardson might be doing this season for Seattle. I wouldn't spend a ton of my free agent auction budget on him, but I do think that he's a worthwhile add in 12 or 14 team leagues. Drop Eddie Lacy and add Chris Carson. So speaking of the Seattle team, we also got a clearer picture of what this backfield might look like this season. The revenge game did not happen for Eddie Lacy. Against the Packers, Lacy had five total carries for a grand total of 3 yards. Chris Carson, the preseason darling, finished the game with 6 carries for 39 yards, and he added another catch for 10. And Carson was the only Seattle running back to see a goal line carry. At the end of the day, Lacy played only 7 snaps for Seattle, while Chris Carson beat out CJ ProSize 27-15. Now, Thomas Rawls was inactive, but I still think that there's a chance that Chris Carson just ends up running away with the early down job in this offense. And if and when Seattle is in a positive game script, perhaps this week against San Francisco, that should be money for fantasy purposes. Add Marlon Mack. I talked about selling Frank Gore last week, so let's look at Marlon Mack for a second and what went down in week one. Frank Gore did play more snaps than Marlon Mack did, but he only played 2 more snaps than Mack. Both players were predictably not very good on the ground. They both finished with a 30% success rate because they both had 3 successes on 10 attempts. Gore ended up with 42 yards, Mack ended up with 24 yards, so Gore was the more efficient guy overall. But from a success rate standpoint, they looked very, very similar. But the important thing here is that they actually used Marlon Mack on the goal line. He scored a touchdown, but he actually finished the week with 3 attempts from within his opponent's 5-yard line. And through Sunday, that was only met or exceeded by Leonard Fournette and Mike Gillisley. I don't think Marlon Mack is going to be very usable until Andrew Luck gets back in this Colts lineup. But when Andrew Luck gets back, he might be a decent flex option who can take over some more of that early down work from Frank Gore. Add Charles Clay. So on Sunday, Amari Cooper had 4 targets within his opponent's 10-yard line. That's the only player through Sunday in the entire NFL with more looks from that area of the field than Charles Clay. And I think it's interesting, when you look at the receiving depth chart in Buffalo, Charles Clay is one of the only players that Tyrod Taylor has played significant time with. We saw that in full effect in week one. Tyrod targeted him on over 32% of his passes. That type of market share has to be on your radar. Chucky Clay could really be a thing this year because he might have a nice week-to-week high floor. The matchup was great in week one, but I do love that target volume. Add the Raiders defense. What more do I have to say? They're playing the Jets in week two. That's why you want to play the Raiders in week two. But the Raiders actually looked pretty competent in week one against Tennessee, holding Marcus Mariota and the Titans offense just 1 offensive touchdown. I think they should be able to do a lot of work against New York as 13.5-point favorites. And remember, New York threw 2 interceptions against the average at best Buffalo defense on Sunday. I think the Raiders are a great, great streaming option. add Jared Cook. So as you know, I write a 15 transactions article on NumberFire each Tuesday. The goal of this episode, the 15 transactions show for the Late Round podcast, is to provide more context to those transactions. But I'm going to start giving a bonus transaction on the show every week to give you guys a little something extra that you won't find in the article. So Jared Cook. I've mentioned Cook off and on throughout the offseason as an intriguing tight end option, and week one actually was a low-key good performance for him. He had 5 catches for 56 yards on 5 targets. He had a near 16% market share, which is not bad at all at the tight end position. And he's going to get the Jets this week, which is why I do like adding him as a tight end streamer. Charles Clay, the guy I just talked about who's near the top in red zone targets in the entire NFL, is coming off a game against the Jets. The Jets defense is beatable everywhere, and with the Raiders looking like they're going to score a lot of points, Jared Cook could be a part of that. So as a dart throw tight end, I don't mind Jared Cook this week. That's going to be it though for the 15 Transactions show, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, do so ASAP by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher, pretty much anywhere podcasts can be found, and click the subscribe button on those platforms, or whatever the button says on those respective platforms. You can also follow me on Twitter at LateRoundQB, and if you have any questions for this week's mailbag show, which will drop on Friday, you can send them to Twitter or email me at jj@numberfire.com. Remember though, no start-sit questions. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you on Thursday with the start-sit episode.